Chapter 16. The World as a Polder. What does it all mean to us today? Introduction. The most serious problems. If we don't solve them. Life in Los Angeles. One-liner objections. The past and the present. Reasons for hope. The chapters of this book have discussed why past or present societies succeed or fail at solving their environmental problems. Now, this final chapter considers the book's practical relevance. What does it all mean to us today? I shall begin by explaining the major sets of environmental problems facing modern societies, and the timescale on which they pose threats. As a specific example of how these problems play out, I examine the area where I have spent most of the last 39 years of my life, Southern California. I then consider the objections most often raised to dismiss the significance of environmental problems today. Since half of this book was devoted to ancient societies because of the lessons that they might hold for modern societies, I look at differences between the ancient and the modern worlds that affect what lessons we can draw from the past. It seems to me that the most serious environmental problems facing past and present societies fall into a dozen groups. 8 of the 12 were significant already in the past, while 4, numbers 5, 7, 8, and 10, energy, the photosynthetic ceiling, toxic chemicals, and atmospheric changes, became serious only recently. The first 4 of the 12 consist of destruction or losses of natural resources. The next 3 involve ceilings on natural resources. The 3 after that consist of harmful things that we produce or move around. And the last 2 are population issues. Let's begin with the natural resources that we are destroying or losing. Natural habitats, wild food sources, biological diversity, and soil. 1. At an accelerating rate, we are destroying natural habitats or else converting them to human-made habitats, such as cities and villages, farmlands and pastures, roads and golf courses. The natural habitats whose losses have provoked the most discussion are forests, wetlands, coral reefs, and the ocean bottom. As I mentioned in the preceding chapter, more than half of the world's original area of forest has already been converted to other uses, and at present conversion rates, one quarter of the forests that remain will become converted within the next half century. Those losses of forests represent losses for us humans, especially because forests provide us with timber and other raw materials, and because they provide us with so-called ecosystem services, such as protecting our watersheds, protecting soil against erosion, constituting essential steps in the water cycle that generates much of our rainfall, and providing habitat for most terrestrial plant and animal species. Deforestation was a, or the, major factor in all the collapses of past societies described in this book. In addition, as discussed in Chapter 1 in connection with Montana, issues of concern to us are not only forest destruction and conversion, but also changes in the structure of wooded habitats that do remain. Among other things, that changed structure results in changed fire regimes that put forests, chaparral woodlands, and savannas at greater risk of infrequent but catastrophic fires. Other valuable natural habitats besides forests are also being destroyed. An even larger fraction of the world's original wetlands than of its forests has already been destroyed, damaged, or converted. Consequences for us arise from wetlands' importance in maintaining the quality of our water supplies and the existence of commercially important freshwater fisheries. While even ocean fisheries depend on mangrove wetlands to provide habitat for the juvenile phase of many fish species. About one-third of the world's coral reefs, the oceanic equivalent of tropical rainforests, because they are home to a disproportionate fraction of the ocean's species, have already been severely damaged. If current trends continue, about half of the remaining reefs would be lost by the year 2030. That damage and destruction result from the growing use of dynamite as a fishing method. Reef overgrowth by algae, seaweeds, when the large herbivorous fish that normally graze on the algae become fished out. Effects of sediment runoff and pollutants from adjacent lands cleared or converted to agriculture. And coral bleaching due to rising ocean water temperatures. It has recently become appreciated that fishing by trawling is destroying much or most of the shallow ocean bottom and the species dependent on it. 2. Wild foods, especially fish, and to a lesser extent shellfish, contribute a large fraction of the protein consumed by humans. In effect, this is protein that we obtain for free, other than the cost of catching and transporting the fish. And that reduces our needs for animal protein that we have to grow ourselves in the form of domestic livestock. About 2 billion people, most of them poor, depend on the oceans for protein. If wild fish stocks were managed appropriately, the stock levels could be maintained, and they could be harvested perpetually. Unfortunately, the problem known as the Tragedy of the Commons, Chapter 14, has regularly undone efforts to manage fisheries sustainably, and the great majority of valuable fisheries already either have collapsed or are in steep decline. Chapter 15. Past societies that overfished included Easter Island, Mangareva, and Henderson. Increasingly, fish and shrimp are being grown by aquaculture, which in principle has a promising future as the cheapest way to produce animal protein. In several respects, though, aquaculture, as commonly practiced today, is making the problem of declining wild fisheries worse rather than better. Fish grown by aquaculture are mostly fed wild-caught fish, and thereby usually consume more wild fish meat, up to 20 times more, than they yield in meat of their own. They contain higher toxin levels than do wild-caught fish. Cultured fish regularly escape, interbreed with wild fish, and thereby harm wild fish stocks genetically, because cultured fish strains have been selected for rapid growth at the expense of poor survival in the wild. 50 times worse survival for cultured salmon than for wild salmon. Aquaculture runoff causes pollution and eutrophication. The lower costs of aquaculture than of fishing, by driving down fish prices, initially drive fishermen to exploit wild fish stocks even more heavily in order to maintain their incomes constant when they are receiving less money per pound of fish.